version.
In South Australia I was born.
Heave away, haul away.
South Australia, round Cape Horn.
We're bound for South Australia.
All the way, a rolling king.
Heave away, haul away.
All the way, you'll hear me sing.
We're bound for South Australia.
Oh, I'm sure you're familiar with that one. I mean, gosh, I grew up singing that song. I think they must have taught us that at school. And it's a very spirited version there that you would have just heard. It's performed by the Fisherman's Friends. I wonder how many more sea shanties you know, because you're about to be introduced to a whole lot more. In tonight's conversion, I'm very lucky to be joined by two members of the incredibly popular English sea shanty group, Fisherman's Friends. You are getting an education on the world of the sea shanty, maritime work songs, and hopefully you'll be singing away by the end of it. Now, Fisherman's Friends are made up of actual fishermen and tradesmen. They've got more than 200 traditional shanties and stirring originals in their repertoire. They hail from a tiny fishing village in England. They signed a major record deal in 2010. In 2019, their story inspired the box office hit film Fisherman Friends. There's even been a sequel, and they're finally making their way to Australia very soon for a tour all around the country coming up in January. So let me welcome Jeremy Brown. Hey, Jeremy.
Hi, Suzanne. Are you okay?
Very well, thank you. And I've got John Cleave with me now too. Hey, John, welcome to you.
Yeah, thanks very much. Nice to be here.
We're very excited to have you. Now, you guys hail from a place called Port Isaacs in Cornwall. Some people might know it from the hit TV show Doc Martin. But for the rest of us, John, perhaps you could describe what your hometown is like.
At the moment, we're having our first dry, sunny day for what for us is the autumn. And it's a really lovely day out there. But if you imagine the north side of the toe of England, if you look at it, we're in a county called Cornwall. And we regard ourselves as Cornish rather than English in a way. So probably Cornish first, British second, and English third is the way we regard ourselves. Our little village is really, Jeremy would describe it, I think, as no more than a hole in the cliff. Very, very steep-sided, big cliffs either side, two massive breakwaters at the end of it, which protect the old village from the ravages of the Atlantic Ocean. So if you sailed straight out from Port Isaac and just kept going, you would probably end up in Nova Scotia. So it's a cluster of tiny little old cottages, mostly dating sort of 200-300 years old, right at the bottom of this very, very steep valley surrounded by cliffs. And the population is about 1,100, which is the same as it was 150 or 200 years ago. But the old part of the village, the old preserved conservation area part of the village, there's not many of us live down here now. But the only thing that most of us go to down here now is the pub.
Now, Jeremy, just picking up on what John said there, that you would regard yourselves perhaps as English third, Cornish first, British second. Jeremy, for you, what is the essence of being Cornish? Now, I've got a lot of Cornish blood, so look, I relate to you, absolutely. zillions of ancestors hailing from Cornwall. But tell me what it means to be Cornish. What's the spirit of the Cornishman?
I think it's very much a Celtic thing. I think it's very seafaring, so we link up. It's easier to link with us to over to France or Ireland or Wales than it is to go up country back in the olden days. So I think there's this sort of identification more with a seafaring thing than actually with the rest of England. And I think there is a unique sort of Cornwall, quite sort of stubborn, quite independent. We like to be independent. We like to think we could almost be an independent country. We're virtually severed off from England with a river Tamar, which runs from the north right down to the south. And all but a little bit is we're separated. So we consider ourselves a bit of an island, and we're like island races normally are. They're just a little bit different.
Now, Jeremy, you're a lobster fisherman. Is singing still part of sea life?
Well, no, I think I might have single-handedly put the end to it, to be honest with you, because before I was a shanty singer, I started working on my first boat with my dad. So I'm a fifth generation fisherman from Port Isaac, and my son fishes now, so he's sixth generation. But we still used to do some jobs, not actually with a a known shanty, but just with a rhythmic sort of shout, you know, that my dad used to do. So there were three of us on the boat, and he would do that, and we'd moor up the boat with heavy blocks and tackles in Port Isaac, and we wouldn't use the winch for that. We'd always do that by hand. And then one day I was on the boat on my own, and I just sort of rigged up a different pulley system and used the winch to moor up, and I got her, I got the boat even tighter than we normally did by hand. And when my dad came back on board, he said, "Oh, who's been aboard with you?" And I said, "Well, no one. I've done it with a winch." And from that day on, we never did it anymore. So I think it's my fault. That I demise of the shanties in Port Isaac is my fault, I think.
Now, I've got John Cleave with me and Jeremy Brown, who are both in the Fisherman's Friends. Like, John, you were kicked out of choir in primary school. So how did you find your way back to singing?
Oh, yeah, it was long as it, primary school. I was thrown out of choir for being a growler because of the, I guess my voice was quite deep even as a child. So it really put me off, and I didn't actually sing again until I was nearly 30. I was living in Bristol at the time. We'd come away from Cornwall and gone to live in Bristol. And I saw a Paul Robeson movie. Now, to any of your listeners who are unaware of Paul Robeson, he was probably America's first black superstar back in the 1920s. And he was the man who was most famous, I guess, for singing Old Man River. And I remember seeing this movie and thinking his voice was, I loved his voice. And I went out and bought, you know, back then a couple of cassettes and CDs with Paul Robeson singing. And I found that I was able to sing along in the key that he sang in, which was the first time I'd ever been able to sing along to anything, really. I think it wasn't that I was a growler and couldn't sing. It was that I hadn't found the place to sing, if you get me. So I learned to sing along to that and learned to harmonize along to that just by listening to it. And then at the age of 30, I moved back to Port Isaac with my wife and met up with Jeremy and his brothers and a lot of other old friends. That was when the kernel of the Fisherman's Friends began to form. For such a small village, and in our age group, the guys there, we had a great sort of breadth of voices, from top tenor to second tenor to baritone, down to myself as a true bass. So we were very, very fortunate in that aspect, and that's how we took it forward.
You're on Nightlife on ABC Radio. It's Suzanne Hill with you on this Saturday night. We are getting you a lesson, a conversion to sea shanties. And to do that for you, Jeremy Brown and John Cleave are here. They are part of the Fisherman's Friends. They will be in Australia in January. They will be starting off early in the year, 7th of January in Adelaide, and then in Brunswick, Victoria, Geelong, St Kilda, Frankston, Hobart, Canberra, in the Blue Mountains, also in Sydney at the State Theatre, Newcastle, the Gold Coast, Caloundra, Brisbane and Perth. So that is a big tour. But what we're going to do now is play our first track of this conversion for you. It's Santillana. This is a song set in the Mexican-American Wars of the 1840s. Jeremy, why is this a good place to start?
Well, it's a very good song. It's got a nice tune to it and it goes along nicely. And it's sort of, there's a couple of songs that tells the stories of the struggles, which are probably still going on now between America and Mexico. It's just a nice catchy one. So it's a good introduction to shanty singing. It sort of trips along very nicely. And it tells a bit of a story, but obviously, you know, it tells a story from a certain point of view. And then there's another song that tells a story from a different point of view. So I think it depends what side of the fence you're on to some extent.
All right, this is Santillana, and this is performed by you, the Fisherman's Friends.
Leave away, Santillana.
As Santillana gained a name
all along the plains of Mexico.
Oh.
Heave her up and away we'll go. Heave away, Santillana. Heave her up and away we'll go. All along the plains of Mexico.
As Santillana shovels his gold.
Heave away, Santillana.
Cape Horn through the ice and snow.
All along the plains of Mexico.
Oh.
Heave her up and away we'll go. Heave away,
heave away,
Santillana. Heave her up and
Santayana, that's performed by you tonight for the by the Fisherman's Friends. I've got two of them with me tonight, converting you to sea shanties. Jeremy Brown and John Cleave will be heading to Australia not too long at all, in early January, for a tour right around the country. Now, John, can you just explain to me, what is the essence of a sea shanty? What are the ingredients that it has to have?
Well, they came about as work songs during the Great Expansion, I guess, of the Western world into the Americas, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa. And they came about as work songs because the ships that people traveled in were obviously sailing ships. And the sailing ships needed massive crews of men, mostly, to haul on the ropes, to pull the sails up or to turn the capstan, to pull the anchor up or to pump out the bilges. And it was found that obviously if the men were able to work in tandem with one another, it made that huge physical effort that much more easy. So the shanty, which sounds like chanty, so it's a sort of chant, evolved to enable the men to coordinate their efforts to get these jobs done better. And the ship's companies, because these songs were rarely used on board of Royal Naval ships or naval ships of any description, because they were sort of counter to good discipline, they were regarded as. But in the commercial ships that they were used on, shanty men, in other words, a man who stood on top of the capstan or next to the guys that were pulling the ropes, the shanty man who banged out the rhythm with his foot or on a drum and chanted the words of these songs to them. And the words were mostly call and response. So the shanty man would sing a line and the men would then respond. And as they responded, they would all put the effort in together to pull on the rope or to turn the capstan or to move the pump handles up and down. That's very basically it. So it was to enable a coordinated effort of men to do these very, very physical tasks. Mm. And it lasted until, you know, maybe the 1860s or 70s, when mechanization of ships, of course, came in with steam power. And that was the what they describe in books as the age of the end of the golden age of shanty singing.
Although obviously it went for longer in Port Isaac until that day that Jeremy brought everything to an end.
Yeah, sorry about that. You know,
we are sort of very much stuck in the past in Port Isaac, yeah.
And so, Jeremy, can you explain if, for example, I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, South Australia, heave away, haul away. As those words would be sung, would there literally be men heaving and hauling? I'm not sure what the difference is between the two of those, but at the time that is being sung in those songs?
Yes, that's the idea of it. And the shanty man would keep the song going for as long as the task took. So if you see these songs written down, often there's a lot of verses, and basically if he got to the end of it, if he couldn't make something up, he would go back to the start of the song and literally carry on until the job's done. And obviously they'd have to work sort of in time with the role of the ship as well. So, you know, we sing them, obviously we're not on board ship, and we sing them in sort of some sort of rhythm, some sort of time, but they would have been speeded up as the ship sort of rolled down and then sort of slowed down as the ship came up, because we sort of got a thing on board ships where we have sort of variable gravity, we call it. So as the bow of the ship's coming down, if you're standing up forward, as the ship's coming down, things get lighter, if you see what I mean. So you can actually pick something up quite easily. But as the ship's rising up again, it's heavier to pick up. So it would have been done with the rhythm of the ship and the waves and everything. So it was very much an organic thing. So, and like you say, it's to keep the boys in time, and they go heave away, haul away. Yeah. And to keep the spirits up as well, not just the timing. It was hopefully everyone got into the actual song and sort of forget about the hard work and actually just get into it and makes the jobs more enjoyable.
Now, the next track that we're going to play, the next shanty, I should say, is called Nelson's Blood. And this relates to a tale about Nelson's body and its preservation. I mean, I know all about the, you know, the death being very dramatic and he was there with, you know, his one arm missing and blind in his eye. But what happened after he died? Just tell us what went on with his body, John.
Well, it was they had to bring it back to Britain for, as it turned out, a state funeral. And obviously it was down off of the coast of Spain at Trafalgar, and it was going to take some weeks to get back. Indeed, it took the news of the British victory over the French and Spanish fleets at Trafalgar. It took news of the victory to several weeks to get home. And the landfall of the news happened down in Falmouth, which is down on the south coast of Cornwall, and was then taken up to the Admiralty by horseback. It was rushed up there, and amidst great national celebration, Nelson's body, meanwhile, was put in an, ironically, I have to say, put in a barrel of French brandy, because that was they preserved bodies. I don't know what the French thought about that. It's insult to injury, really, isn't it? But it was lashed to a mast on the Victory, which was repaired because there was a very bad storm after Trafalgar. The ship was repaired and then nursed back to Britain. His body in the barrel was accompanied at all time by a unit of Royal Marines who brought it ashore. And the rumour is that his body was taken from the barrel, that the Marines toasted one another with a drink of French brandy from that same barrel, and which forever afterwards became known as a drop of Nelson's blood.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I'd feel about drinking a bit of that. Well, let's hear the song, A Drop of Nelson's Blood.
Chariot along, we'll roll the old. Chariot along, we'll roll. Chariot along and we'll all hang on behind. And another swig of gin wouldn't do us any harm. And another swig of gin wouldn't do us any harm. And another swig of gin wouldn't do us any harm. And we'll all hang on behind. And we'll roll the old chariot along. We'll roll the old chariot along. We'll roll. And a drop of Nelson's blood wouldn't do us any harm. And a drop of Nelson's blood wouldn't do us any harm. And a drop of Nelson's blood wouldn't do us any harm. And we'll all hang on behind.
That is absolutely fabulous. The longest John's there singing A Drop of Nelson's Blood or Nelson's Blood. You are on Nightlife on ABC Radio. I've got with me John Cleave and Jeremy Brown, who are members of the Fisherman's Friends, who are heading to Australia in January. It's a great chance to go and catch them in concert. Now, do you tend to sing a cappella, Jeremy, or do you have instruments to accompany you, or does it depend change from song to song?
In the very early days, it was all a cappella, and then one of the guys who doesn't tour with us anymore now, Billy, he introduced the guitar. He plays guitar, and we put a bit of guitar on. And then basically, when we got picked up as more of a commercial sort of a group by Rupert Christie, really, who said he wanted to arrange our arrangements and put some percussion to it. We got Jason from Padstow and Toby on guitar and accordion, which is a great backing. And now we got another chap that plays pretty much anything that's string, to be honest with you. So now we have got four instruments on Stray. So that's where we've got to after all these years. But I mean, on board ship, they could be accompanied by a fiddler or a drum beat or just stamp and go, where you stamp your foot and go to make it bit more, interesting, because one shanty can sound pretty much like another one, to be honest with you, because they've all got a similar job to do. They tell different stories and they're in different times, but if you just listen to an hour and a half of shanties, you'd be thinking, well, I've had enough of that for a fair while now, you know. But so we introduce quite a lot of stuff now, and we talk and we try and have a bit of fun in between the songs as well. So it's not just it's not just a whole evening of shanties being shouted at you, but what we do on stage, you know.
Yeah. Now, John, just tell us a bit about the early days and that transformation from, you know, a group of blokes, tradies, fishermen, former cops singing shanties together to suddenly being guys who are having top 10 albums.
Yeah, it was quite remarkable. So we always on a Friday night used to go down by the harbour in Port Isaac. It's a big cement area there where the boats get pulled up. At the end of the day, which is known as the Platt. And we would stand on the Platt, have a couple of pints and sing some sea shanties. And we found it got more and more popular over the years. We started off the first night, I think, with half a dozen curious people were sort of staring at us to start with, and a dog that yelped right through the proceedings. But after that, you know, we ended up getting maybe 100 people, maybe 200 people. And then it became a bit of an institution, which was nice. And then, as Jeremy said, Rupert Christie, who was an independent record producer, was down on holiday and saw us and decided in his wisdom that he might be able to do something with our sound. So with his help in the early stages, and since I think it's fair to say we've very much done it ourselves, we've taken these songs, which, as Jeremy said, are in a very basic form, a lot of them, and you couldn't expect an audience to see 2 hours of men shouting sea shanties at you. You
Heave
have
this,
to control
that. Heave this, yeah, hold that, yeah.
What a nightmare that would be. So we give them fresh rhythms. We give them harmony, which is our particular, has always been our particular strength from the tenor and basses. The baritones tend to carry the melody through. So, you do need to have with harmony singing, we found you need a root to be able to harmonize with. So we do that, and we instrumentalize bits of it now, and also contemporize it. So in a lot of the songs and presentations of the songs that we do now, we'll put a little bit of a more contemporary song, like Hit the Road Jack or Sweet Home Alabama. They're different places where these newer songs, if you like, can just fit in and just illustrate how, you know, things haven't really changed over the years. Music is music, and it's a fusion of music now. It makes now for sometimes a powerful sound, sometimes a quite touching sound, you know, with the sort of quieter songs and ballads and things. And when we do a performance, there's a great variety within that performance of fun songs, of powerful songs, of more thoughtful songs. And each of us takes a turn at singing the lead. So for the audience, every time you sort of move on to a new song, there'll be somebody else that leads the song. The whole performance itself, we regard it as an engagement with the audience, because Jeremy and I were both at about 50 years old when we were discovered and plucked from obscurity and given all this attention, which has been fantastic. But it's been very important to keep our feet on the floor. And I think we have. And I think proof of that is that we engage with the audience, and the audience seem to think, yeah, they're a nice bunch of blokes. And, you know, I could get up on stage and sing with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Little did they know what a horrible bunch of blokes we really are.
Now, I know that's not true. Now, we're going to play a couple of wailing songs now. The first is Old Maui, which is performed here by Colm McGuinness. We'll hear that, and then we'll talk a bit more about the role of the whaling industry in the development of sea shanties.
Down to Old Maui, we're homeward bound from the Arctic grounds, rolling down to Old Maui.
Soft the breeze of the island trees, now the ice is far astern. Them native maids, them tropical glazes awaiting our return. Even now their big brown eyes look out, hoping hoping some fine day to see our baggy sails running for the gales, rolling down to old Maui,
rolling down to old Maui, me boys, rolling down to old Maui. We're homeward bound from the Arctic grounds, rolling down to old Maui.
Colm McGinnis and Old Maui. You are listening to Nightlife tonight. We are doing a conversion to sea shanties for you. My guests are Jeremy Brown and John Cleave, who are part of the Fisherman's Friends, who will be in Australia next month performing a series of concerts right across the country. So look them up if you're keen to get involved in some sea shanties. Jeremy, how rich a seam of inspiration was whaling for sea shanties?
Well, I mean, it's obviously, frowned on these days, and the whales are making a tremendous comeback. But it was a tremendously important fishery, even though, you know, they're not fish. But it was a big thing back in the day, the oil for the lamps and what have you, you know, and the meat. It was a very, very important thing. So, it's in the past, and, to sing songs about it is fine, I think. And there's some cracking songs that have come out of it. These guys, they went on, looks like impossible trips, to be honest with you. Because, I mean, these guys probably would have come from the eastern seaboard of America and gone down around Cape Horn and maybe gone right up then up to the Russian, up Bering Sea, up in Russia. And then, before they got any sort of comfort, they had to come back to Hawaii, back in the Pacific, to stock up, and then probably sail all the way back down around again to the home port, maybe in Nantucket or somewhere like that on the eastern. So, what these guys did was absolutely unreal. I mean, why anyone would sign up to do these trips, I don't know. But I suppose there was some sort of adventure and excitement in it.
All right, well, let's hear the next track that we've got. This is Wellerman, and this is The Longest Johns Again.
One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. For 40 days or even more, the line went slack, then tight once more. All boats were lost, there were only four, but still that whale did go. Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go.
As far as I've heard, the fight's still on, the line's not cut,
and the whale's not gone.
The Wellerman makes his irregular calls
to encourage the captain, crew and all. Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go.
We are converting you to sea shanties here on Nightlife tonight. You're with Suzanne Hill, and I'm with Jeremy Brown and John Cleave, who are part of the Fisherman's Friends. They're beginning their tour of Australia in Adelaide. I think it's January the 7th. And now, next up, and John, you can explain this for us. You've actually picked for us to hear two versions of the same song, one called Hanging Johnny. Why are we going to listen to two versions, and tell us about this song?
It's a remarkable song, Hanging Johnny. We don't actually sing it as part of the Fisherman's Friends repertoire. It's a very bloodthirsty, blood-curdling song. And Hanging Johnny was actually a name. So one of the interesting things about sea shanties, if you like, is they're like almost little literary archaeological sites, if you get me. So Hanging Johnny was a nickname given to a gentleman who was called Jack Ketch. Jack Ketch was the hangman for Judge Jeffreys during a period in the west of history of the west of England called the Bloody Assizes. The Bloody Assizes followed Monmouth's rebellion in the 1680s, where the Duke of Monmouth invaded the country to fight against James II, and James II won hands down at the time, and Judge Jeffreys held trials all over our counties of Somerset and Dorset, and actually was a very, very brutal judge. and Jack Ketch was his sidekick. Lots of the people that were convicted of rebellion were transported. Now, they couldn't transport them to Australia back then because I don't think it had actually been discovered. And I'm sure, not so that your listeners don't feel left out, they would have been transported to Australia had it been an entity. However, they transported them then to plantations in the West Indies as indentured slaves. So if you were lucky enough not to be executed after this rebellion, that was your fate. And the ancestors of those British West Country people still live in Barbados to this day and are known as the Ekki Bekkis, which is slang for white trash. And they are still there as part of West Indian society to this day. An interesting thing is as well that Jack Ketch then became, about 20 years after this rebellion, he became a part of the Punch and Judy show. So the hangman in Punch and Judy is based upon the hangman, Jack Ketch. So there's all sorts of little things within what is in effect a very simple but blood-curdling sea shanty that you could be singing along to without realizing the massive significance of it, which dates back to the 1680s.
Yeah, and so I think the first version of Hanging Johnny, this is a slower, sadder version of it, and then the second one's a bit more jaunty. So why don't we hear the first one? So this is Stan Ridgway performing Hanging Johnny.
E-A-I-O. I'd hang them by their flippers, and it's hang, boys, hang. Oh, I'd hang a highway robber, E-A-I-O. I'd hang the burglar chopper, yeah, it's hang, boys, hang. Oh, I'd hang the noted liar, E-A-I-O. I'd hang a bloated friar, and it's hang, boys, hang. They say I hung a copper, E-A-I-O. Oh, I gave him the long dropper, and it's hang, boys, hang.
Stan Ridgway doing Hanging Johnny for you. We're converting you to sea shanties here on Nightlife Tonight. Jeremy Brown and John Cleave are here from the Fishermen's Friends who begin their tour of Australia on Wednesday the 7th of January at the Theberton Theatre in Adelaide. Now, Jeremy, just before we play the second version of it, which is Hanging Johnny done by the Salts, just sort of talk to us about the difference as you see it between the two versions as we go to listen to the second one.
I love that version. It's normally sung in quite a sort of, aggressive way, because obviously the words are quite sort of dark. So I really enjoyed it. Listen to that one. I'm going to go back and listen to that one again then.
Well, why don't I just get into the slightly more aggressive traditional version of it then? A jolly song about hanging, surprisingly so, right, John?
Yeah, it's cheerful, isn't it, if you've got to do it.
Well, there is that line there, something about hanging, then he's, but hanging isn't funny, which is very much true. Now, the curse of this segment is that so often I have plenty of songs lined up that I don't get a chance to play because of too much wonderful conversation and It's happened again. So what I might do is I'd like to go straight to South Australia. I feel that we should play that because, you know, obviously it's written about Australia. But Jeremy, why South Australia? Do you know much about the genesis of this song? Because, you know, we're bound for New South Wales, we're bound for Victoria. I haven't heard those songs. Why did South Australia get this song?
The Cornwall's known for ancient, really hard rock mining. And that was very much called for back in the day down in Australia, you know, to get the gold and other minerals out. So there was a huge exodus, really, from Cornwall down, and that's where they ended up in South Australia. That's where they were going, you know, bound for South Australia. So that's really where it came from. And it's a great song. It's sung, it seems to be sung all over the world, to be honest with you. But it's the first shanty that I actually picked up and ran with. I heard it sung down in Loving Little Cove on the other side of the county from us, down at Cadsworth. And it's without doubt the first song I sung. And we've finished every set with it ever since we've been the Fisherman's Friend. So goodness knows how many times but it never seems to, it doesn't seem to feel old, to be honest with you. And it's just one, and everyone knows it. All the pubs in Cornwall and that, everyone knows it. So if you start singing it, everyone's going to join in. It's just great. But its history is very much a real thing. You know, they were bound for South Australia.
Do you know, Jeremy, as soon as you said that, I went, oh, well, I've got Cornish mining ancestors who came out to the copper mines in South Australia. And in fact, touring around South Australia a couple of years ago and understanding all the little historical connections that the Cornish have to all of those mining towns, you're spot on now, I see it. So was it a deliberate choice to start in Adelaide? I can imagine the crowd will go wild when you sing South Australia there.
Well, I hope so. I think we do a good job to it. I know with a lot of our songs, actually, we've sort of shortened them. We've cut a few verses out because it can get a bit, you know, same old. But so, we've got sort of, our version isn't the longest possible one. So I'm hoping that people will appreciate what we do to it. And it's sung with a lot of, when we do it, a lot of gusto and a lot of feeling every time. And it's just that, you know, it never really gets old. It's funny, really, because, you know, people sort of say, well, aren't you fed up? I said, well, no, because it's just every night, it's a different audience, there's a different feel to it. And we literally, any energy we've got left at that end of the end of the evening will go into South Australia. So it has to be the last one because we couldn't sing again after that.
and John, the version that you've selected is by Stan Hugel. What do you like about his performance?
Well, Stan Hugel was the gentleman that did the definitive collection of shanties in the middle part of the 1900s, and his collection of sea shanties, I mean, it's just vast. And he was known as the last shanty man because he used to work on a lot of these, a lot of the training sailing ships that there were, and kept the art of the shanty man alive. As Jeremy says, it's very, very popular here in Cornwall as a song. When you consider that the almost half of the population of Australia in the mid-1800s was of Cornish extraction, and that was all down to the hard rock mining, that's a pretty remarkable thing. As the Fisherman's Friends, we're looking forward to going to Adelaide, and, you know, maybe we might get a visit out to the York Peninsula, because I think that's where a lot of the Cornish heritage is out there. And we're looking forward to seeing if the Australian Cornish pasties are up to scratch.
Well, they are very good. And, I mean, it's a pity you haven't timed it with the Cornish festival, the Kernowec Lowenda, which is on the York Peninsula. So anyway, but I've had plenty of South Australian Cornish pasties, but well, you're the expert, so you'll have to judge. John, Jeremy, thank you so much for being here on Nightlife with us tonight and sharing all these shanties with us and the stories behind them. I hope you have a fabulous time in Australia.
I'm sure we will. We're really looking forward to it and hopefully see so many people as we possibly can out there.
Very Jeremy, excited. John, thank you so much. Jeremy Brown, John Cleave, they are from the Fisherman's Friends, starting Wednesday the 7th of January at the Theberton Theatre in Adelaide, then in Brunswick, Geelong, St Kilda, Frankston, Hobart, Canberra, the Blue Mountains, Sydney, then Newcastle, Gold Coast, Caloundra, Brisbane and Perth. And to take us out, South Australia.
Oh, in South Australia where I was born, heave away, all away in South Australia round Cape Horn. I'm bound for South Australia. haul away, you're rolling king. Heave away, I haul away. Haul away, you'll hear me sing. And we're bound for South Australia. Oh, South Australia's me native home. Heave away, haul away. From there I never more will roam. And we're bound for South Australia. Haul away, you're rolling king. Heave away, haul away. Haul away, you'll hear me sing. We're bound for South Australia.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.